Western corn rootworm is a major pest of corn in the Midwest United States. Damage is caused by larvae feeding on the roots of corn in late spring to early summer. Besides causing decreased plant vigor from larval feeding, if you have a large number of larvae, corn plants will actually fall over because the roots have been so destroyed. This is called lodging right here. The Western corn rootworm is univoltine, and the typical life cycle is completed entirely in corn. The eggs hatch in late spring, and the larvae feed on corn roots. The adults emerge midsummer, and they feed on corn pollen, silks, and kernels. Adults do not generally cause yield loss unless there are just tons of beetles in the field. And then in midsummer to late summer, the females start to lay their eggs in the soil of cornfields, and then the eggs go through obligatory diapause over the winter. Typically, how people would major control mechanism is yearly rotation of crops, because the larvae can only survive on the roots of corn. So, for example, if a farmer were to plant soybeans the spring after a field had corn to it, any larvae emerging in that soybean field would starve and die. However, in the early 1990s in East Central Illinois, close to the Champaign-Urbana area, growers started to notice larval rootworm damage in cornfields that had soybeans planted them the previous year. As it turns out, the females were leaving their natal cornfields and laying their eggs in soybean fields, which the following spring were planted to corn, and then those larvae merging there would survive. What is now known about what we call the rotation-resistant behavioral phenotype is that the females are not necessarily attracted to soybean, nor can they survive for very long on a diet composed strictly of soybean foliage. It is likely that they're laying their eggs indiscriminately in a variety of crops, but rotation resistance is strongest in a landscape composed of a strict corn-soybean rotation. And this is not surprising, because that's a highly predictable landscape, and you would expect that there would be high selective pressure for females to leave corn to lay their eggs elsewhere. In a behavioral assay that I previously developed, I found that resistant females exhibited increased locomotor activity and tendency to take flight, and this would increase the chances that they would end up in a non-cornfield to lay their eggs. I did find significant differences in behavior, but it wasn't enough for a diagnostic to differentiate between the two types, which is why we need a molecular marker for this trait. The approach that we have taken at the University of Illinois is to construct a microarray to look for a candidate that is differentially expressed between the two behavioral types. A cDNA library was previously made at the U of I Keck Center for Biotechnology, along with my co-authors, made from genes that were expressed in adult female heads. It is thought that genes that are relating to behavior would be most highly expressed in the head. The Keck Center, printed the microarray consisting of over 8,000 sequences. These expressed sequence tags, or ESTs, were printed on glass slides to construct the array. My objectives are to use microarrays to look for differential expression between the two behavioral types, between rotation resistant and what we call wild type behavioral phenotypes. That is, those likely to leave corn to lay their eggs, and those likely to remain in corn. And then I would like to synthesize these results across microarray experiments to construct a list of candidates to examine with quantitative real-time reverse transcription PCR. They're two RTs. And then discuss their applicability as a marker. I'll only be reporting results to date on 5 of those candidates. The large microarray experiment that I did was made with collections made in Illinois in 2006. You can see the rotation-resistant collections right here, and the wild type in yellow. The rotation-resistance phenomenon is spreading rapidly. It's actually in most of the state of Illinois, most of Indiana, and it's even into Ohio, Michigan, and southern Wisconsin now. The closest places to the Champaign-Urbana area to collect wild type beetles is actually the extreme edge of the state. And this population here, Monmouth, is now likely to be in a transition towards rotation resistance, but I'll talk about that later in the talk. There are 3 other previous experiments that were done, and I wanted to compare, synthesize all those results together. One was a smaller experiment that I had done. The other two were done by one of my co-authors. And what I did is I created a custom variable that combines both the magnitude and the difference in expression and the significance for each EST's analysis of variance. And then I rank those such that there would be a bias for those with a large difference in expression, and that was very significant. And then I validated some of these candidates with quantitative real-time RT-PCR. My housekeeping gene is EF1-alpha. It's constitutively and stably expressed. And I compared the expression levels to the genes of interest to EF1-alpha. And when I subtract those, that's called delta CT. So the critical threshold is how we can infer the expression levels. And this was validated with beetles collected in the 2000 season. And I want to bring your attention to this Monmouth population here. We're not actually sure of its status right now, and so I haven't labeled it as either type, and I'll talk about that when I get to my results. These are the results from the large microarray experiment that I just described. The x-axis is the difference in expression. Keep in mind that a value of 1 or negative 1, as denoted by the dotted lines, refers to a twofold difference in expression. Those ESTs that are more highly expressed in the rotation resistant fall on the right hand of the graph. Those more highly expressed in the wild type fall on the left. And then the y-axis is the significance for each particular analysis of variance, measured in negative log p just to keep the graph clean. And this horizontal line here represents the Bonferroni cutoff for the large number of simultaneous tests that I did, and there were 46 that showed a significant difference in expression at this very, very low p-value. I'll be reporting results that I have to date on 5 candidates so far, with 23 individual females. From the microarray, 3 were predicted to have higher expression in the rotation-resistant type, and 2 were predicted to have higher expression in the wild type. And the type effect was significant and had a significant effect on expression patterns in these individuals, but behavioral type was only significant when Monmouth was classified as the rotation-resistant type. Here are the results from the real-time PCR. These are the mean expression differences relative to my housekeeping gene. Note that I couldn't include error bars because these data are log transformed so that I could show you a fold change in expression. But I can show you the stats on this. The candidates A through C that fall on the left side of the dotted line are those that were predicted from the microarray to have higher expression rotation-resistant females. And you can see this trend here. The green bars are higher in all those. And then vice versa, D and E were selected to have higher expression in the wild-type beetles, and you see that. Now, the trends are all there, but only one of these candidates shows a significant difference right here, the candidate that I have labeled A. And this turns out to be more than a twofold difference in expression between the two behavioral types. So the trends that I found from the real-time PCR were the same that I got from my microarray, the difference is only one had a significant difference at 0.05. Well, what does this mean? The microarrays were conducted with pools of 50 heads at a time, whereas the real-time PCR was done with individual beetles. And for a marker to be useful, it needs to be shown in individual beetles and not pools of 50 heads. So that might be why there's a little bit of a difference there. Another thing to note is that many of my candidates have no protein matches. The candidate that I just showed you, A, the one that did have significant differences between the types, has no BLAST-X match on GenBank. So there's no function. It's not necessary to have a function for a marker to be useful, but we can't really extract any mechanism for the observed behavior. And then finally, the population I told you about earlier, Monmouth, looks like it really is in a transition towards evolving rotation resistance. There are people in the Crop Sciences Department and Extension at the University of Illinois that have documented low levels of larval rootworm damage in cornfields that had soybeans planted on the previous year. So their indications, along with my results that I've gotten from the real-time PCR, seem to suggest that this population is indeed evolving rotation resistance. So my candidates are showing the same trends that I got from the microarray, so that's good that it's validated, but only one of them is showing significant differences so far. So that one does show promise to be used as a marker. I can't say that we're there yet, but it has potential. And this is still a work in progress. The behavioral assay that I mentioned in the beginning, I've repeated that. And so that I can examine gene expression in those beetles later and then compare that to behavior and maybe figure out what's going on here. And thank you, and I will, these are people, collaborators and people I'd like to thank, and I'll take any questions. Okay, he asked how the beetles were collected. They're collected as adults. I made these little jars that have funnel lids, and I knocked them directly off of corn plants. I keep track of degree days so that the adult phenology is approximately equal for all locations, and I did collect all of them, the rotation-resistant ones in first-year corn and the wild-type ones in continuous corn. Yes? The replicating microarrays?
Yeah.
Oh, like the design of the large experiment that I did, or?
Yeah,
I do. Each population, I took out pools of 50 heads, so each population has two pools of 50 heads, and then those are also labeled with the different dyes, so there's lots of both technical and biological replication. I can show you later if you would like.
I think that's all the time.